This is Director Jared Maples of the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. Welcome back to Intelligence Unclassified, a podcast about counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and emergency preparedness. Join us as we talk to local and national experts in these fields to discuss New Jersey's diverse threat landscape and offer you a unique perspective on current trends and issues facing our great state. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed, iTunes, or Google Play. You can also follow NJOHSP on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at NJOHSP. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website, www.njohsp.gov.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of OHSP's Intelligence Unclassified podcast. Today's topic is artificial intelligence, an emerging technology and potential threat that us and some of our local partners, as well as other states, are looking at. Earlier this year, Stevens Institute of Technology's Maritime Security Center and an alumni chapter of the Naval Postgraduate School's Center for Homeland Defense and Security hosted a Technology Foresight Forum. This forum brought together a broad base of representatives from the public, private, and government sectors to engage in discourse on the capabilities and potential implications of artificial intelligence, machine learning, and autonomous vehicles on safety, security, and public policy. The overarching goal for the event was simple: to raise awareness and promote inquiry. In addition to presenting at the forum, we at OHSP decided to take Intelligence Unclassified on the road to talk to some of the forum participants and see how technology is impacting each of their organizations, and also learn what they hope to get out of these artificial intelligence-related panels. So we'd ask you to excuse some of the background noise as we recorded some of these sessions on site. Before we dive into the clips, we wanted to get together with two of the people who made this recording possible and delve a little deeper into the inner workings of the forum. With me, I have retired senior policy advisor for the New Jersey State Police, Ray Bisogno, and Deputy Chief Tracy Frazzano of the Montclair Police Department. Me, I, of course, am Eric Tazarczyk, your Director of Preparedness here at OHSP. Thanks to you both for joining us today. Let's jump right in. Ray is the driving force behind this event. What inspired you to put it together?
Well, as you said, we wanted to raise awareness and promote inquiry. We wanted to spark discussion. We wanted to sort of serve as a catalyst for further inquiry. But we also kind of wanted to encourage collaboration across the fields in these pursuits. A lot of the attendees and the panelists themselves came from a lot of different lanes, a lot of different disciplines across the homeland security and private sector spectrum. But they don't always have a forum in which they can speak across those lines and share ideas across those lines. And so that's what we had hoped to accomplish. The expectation wasn't that the attendees would leave with any degree of subject matter expertise. Rather, we actually hoped that they would leave with more questions than they arrived with, that their interest would have been piqued and they would go back to their sectors and engage in more conversation and more research on these topics. And they are. They're complicated topics with a myriad of implications for a broad cross-section of disciplines in our fields. And so we were interested in the intersections of those fields, the intersections of technology and security and privacy for practitioners and policymakers themselves. You know, we selected our keynote, Director Maples, because he's got a unique perspective on security and policy for the state. And we selected our panelists for the same reason, because they had unique perspectives in each of the disciplines that were represented that day. So we wanted to begin to contemplate the implications, not just for their own disciplines, but have them leave with a better appreciation for the implications for the other disciplines that they interact with in the course of their daily professional life. This was sort of our approach. It began as an alumni meeting for the Center for Homeland Defense and Security, and it kind of grew from there. We decided that we didn't want to limit it to alumni. We wanted to try to pull in a lot of different partners who don't typically get exposed or typically party to those discussions. And Tracy, a Naval Postgraduate School alumni, was gracious enough to accept when I conscripted her into service to help with the podcast recording that day. Sorry, Tracy.
Ray, you mentioned the different disciplines that were brought together to discuss these issues. You also mentioned the goal of having people walk away with maybe somewhat more questions to think about than answers. Knowing sometimes the government's tendency to talk at folks, I think it was a good idea to mix together the government and the private sector from varying levels as you did. Let me ask you, do you think folks walked away with the questions as you intended?
Of course, I'd like to think so. Some of the immediate feedback I got that day and in the days and weeks following seemed to suggest that it was. But I think like any new initiative, you don't really know that unless you keep those conversations alive. It's not sort of a once and done thing. We have to keep coming up with new forums, new engagements, new intersections at which to discuss these things. You know, one of the panelists that we'll hear from in one of the clips is David O'Keefe for the Center of Homeland Defense and Security.
Hi, here with the Center for Homeland Defense and Security, we have Dave O'Keefe. How are you doing today, Dave?
Doing great, thank you.
I'd like to ask you, how are today's themes relevant to the Center for Homeland Defense and Security?
Well, at CHDS, we're always looking at emerging trends. And obviously, some of the topics being covered today are at the forefront of what people are starting to not only see unfold around us, but in the ways that it can really impact our society and the way we do our jobs over the next 10 years.
How would you say technology is a major focus for Homeland Security today?
Well, the pace at which things unfold, whether they're events or just our day-to-day lives, are technology-driven. So the complexity of which we deal with natural disasters, as well as potential terrorist threats, things that are tools for us to be able to prepare and respond actually become tools for the bad guys, or make it that much more challenging as modernization, urbanization happens, critical infrastructure when it goes down after a natural disaster. So a lot of the technology that can be tools and helpful also becomes things we rely on. And when we don't have them anymore as a result of some sort of an event, it becomes that much more challenging for us to get things back to normal afterwards. So trying to look ahead all of the different types of homeland security jobs and how we can use artificial intelligence and machine learning as tools, something that's very important to us. But then the reverse of that is to really understand what's going on around us. So we can kind of look over the horizon, understand where we're going as a country, our society, where technology's going, and then better prepare ourselves as leaders.
So we were talking a little bit earlier upstairs, and you said that you have a younger generation coming into the training at the Center for Homeland Defense and Security. Do you think it's advantageous to have them coming in because they're more driven with technology compared to the Executive Leaders Program?
Yeah, it's important to discuss it at all of them. So we try and offer something for all points of people's professional career. So we have the Executive Leaders Program for folks at the high end. We cover the mid to senior folks with the Master's Program and the emergence of folks at the front end. So the role technology plays is understood and practiced a little bit differently by each of those different groups. So where we might find it to be kind of a challenge to understand and use with folks in the Master's and the Executive Leaders Program, the emergence folks may come in just saying, this is kind of run of the mill. I grew up with this. This is not a big deal. We also have an executive education program that brings the learning to you. And that can be anything from a couple of hours to several days. And we expect technology and how that fits in with the growing complexity of the world around us to be a driving factor in that.
His was an important voice to include in these conversations because of the way we educate practitioners and policy professionals in the field. Oftentimes, these Center for Homeland Defense and Security students are senior or ascending in their organizations and are going to have a big impact on policy, whether through advising or through policymaking themselves. So that becomes important as well.
You're right. Those diverse interests, the diverse backgrounds, and I think it's important, the specific disciplines that we saw. And that brings us to Tracy. So Tracy is part of a local law enforcement agency, one of the, if not the most important discipline that's probably dealing with this, the local first responder, local law enforcement, local fire. From your perspective, can you tell us why it was important for you to be part of this event?
Well, it started out, as Ray said, as an alumni event, and that's how I found out about it. As an alumni for the Center for Homeland Defense and Security, I decided that, you know, I wanted to attend the chapter meeting. It broadened out to be something a little bit more than what I had expected. The day before the event, Ray gave me a little call up and said, hey, I'm going to need your help too while attending the event. Can you help us out with this podcast thing that we're going to be doing? And jumped at the opportunity to get even more involved with it. From a local perspective, I think it was very important for local representatives to attend because all events do start as a local event. It's not until you really are able to dig deep into the situation do you find out what other disciplines, what other entities, federal level assets are needed for these types of things. So from my perspective, I feel that it was an asset to have local representation there, especially local law enforcement.
Thanks, Tracy. It's funny you mentioned the timing you had, Ray, the ever-consummate professional, giving you a full day to plan to participate in this conference.
I would like to say that it's a full day. However, you know, Ray decided to call me at 10 p.m. the night before the event.
Listen, out of all the alumni I could have called, I chose you because I knew that you'd be able to get the job done.
feel very privileged and special with that.
So lack of preparation aside, or at least potential opportunity for preparation, Tracy, could you talk a little bit about how you tied in the on-site podcast to the varying topics and disparate disciplines?
So when I got there the morning of the event, Ray handed me over a list of people who would be attending the event. I noticed that we had a lot of different disciplines there, private sector, local, and state. So what I did is I tried to kind of pull people aside so we had a good representation of the different entities there. So for instance, from a local perspective, I was able to get Chief of Training Tom Richardson from the FDNY. And he brought in another type of perspective, a little bit different than my own, since I come from the law enforcement side. All right, we have Tom Richardson here. He's a chief of training with the New York City Fire Department. He's also heads the Northeast chapter of the MPS Alumni Association. Thanks for joining us today, Tom.
Thanks for having me.
What's the reason why you came to this training today?
So the gentleman that organized the event, Ray Bisagno, he's one of our alumni from our Northeast chapter, and Ray expressed an interest in doing a segment or an event related to technology, specifically artificial intelligence and autonomous vehicles and such. So we thought that it would be interesting for the first responder community because we probably don't know enough about it, and I thought that by attending, I could at least get some insight into actually what it really is and how we possibly could apply it in first responder community.
Now, as the overseeing training with the New York City Fire Department, what role do you see technology playing to help with the fire department in New York?
So, as you know, and law enforcement as well, there's always new technologies to help us do our job better, do our job smarter. One of the things I would say about technology, though, in today's environment is that technology is good, but technology is only as good as the user, quite frankly, and also the human factor is always part of our decision-making process. So I think technology is good. It could help us, hopefully, make better decisions in critical situations. But I would say that the younger generation, the new generation, and police, fire, EMS, military, these young people, they're all about technology. And I think that the future may hold many applications for this type of technology just to help us make better decisions. I think as it relates to the command element, not quite sure at the tactical level how this type of technology would work. But at the command level, I think we could find some uses for it.
Is there any specific technology that you're looking into right now with the FDNY?
The technologies that we're looking into now that are newer in the business are more about accountability, tracking firefighters on the fire ground, being able to know where they are at all times, so that in the event of an emergency, somebody's looking for help, a firefighter in particular, in a what we term a mayday situation, a real emergency for that firefighter or firefighters, personnel accountability is huge. And we're using the technology, but the technology is not been perfected to actually pinpoint location in a building, just kind of due to building construction mostly. We do have really good accountability systems to tell us who is there, where they're working, what unit they're working in, which helps us figure out where they should be on the fire ground based on their assignment.
I think also one of the most important things about the forum was the networking opportunities that were given with the private sector. From local law enforcement perspective, community policing is always our main goal, to interact with not only the people in the community, but the businesses and build relationships with them. And by having private sector attend, the forum was an important part. So public-private partnerships are a critical component of homeland defense and security. And the most important reason is because they're not practitioners like our local law enforcement and our local fire or our responders. They bring that technological view and knowledge that we just don't possess. So again, that's why community policing is so important in this whole ordeal and why a guest like Terry Kirkland, Vice President of Driving Mobile Innovation, was a good person to interview for the podcast. So I'm going to grab our first guest off the elevator. Come on over and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Terry Kirkland. I'm the Vice President for DMI. I run our Homeland Security and National Security programs.
Great. Nice meeting you. Let me ask you, why are you attending this event today?
So we are very interested in what the local governments are doing with DHS as well as others for the autonomous vehicles. DMI is a national security provider for technology, and we are very interested in understanding tactical platforms and the autonomous vehicle. We have a commercial side that does a lot of autonomous vehicles, and how that relates to the DHS side of the world is very important to us.
Okay, that's great. Can you also tell me, do you have any background in this type of field work?
So sure. So I'm retired law enforcement. I originally came out of the state of Georgia with the Georgia Bureau of Investigation and then with my sheriff's department doing counterterrorism work and investigations in addition to our SWAT team activities. So I've done a lot of this type of work. From a technology perspective, I was on the technology review panels for my agency.
And where are you stationed out of now?
So now I'm based out of the D.C. metro area. My company is based out of Bethesda, Maryland.
And you do work in the New Jersey area?
We are expanding out. That's one of the reasons I'm here as well, to look at what's going on in this part of the world and understanding who the players are and to meet and speak with as many people as I can to understand what their needs are and what our capabilities are to help them with their needs.
Perfect. Well, it's great having you here today, and I hope you get a lot out of what the presentations are here for today, and look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you. Looking forward to the event.
You know, Terry's perspective is interesting, not just from the intergovernmental perspective from state local governments, but what the private sector is really looking for from governments concerning the specific AI emerging technology of autonomous vehicles. And speaking of the emerging technologies and the state perspective, our next clip is from Lieutenant Krista Mays from the New Jersey State Police. An interesting perspective on the common operating picture and how state policing is using emerging technologies and AI to our advantage.
All right, we're going to welcome Krista Mays here with us. He's a lieutenant with the New Jersey State Police. How are you doing today, Chris?
I'm well.
So what brought you to the symposium today?
Came here at the invitation of our partners from OHS&P to learn about emerging technologies that impact public safety and emergency management.
As far as the New Jersey State Police go, what initiatives are you guys looking at as far as technology?
Currently, we're evaluating a product called Collaborative Response Graphics provided by BAE Systems that's going to provide our troopers in the field as well as our analysts a common operating picture platform to view geospatial data of structures and scenes of critical infrastructure in the state of New Jersey. This technology will allow a third party to go out and perform assessments and enhance the online imagery for mapping purposes, and will help those that respond to a facility that they're not familiar with gain access to certain points of entry and navigate themselves not only inside the structure but on the exterior as well for events like active shooter, chemical releases, fire, etc., missing persons. It's pretty interesting technology because much of the data we rely on right now is open source public media that doesn't really provide, I think, as clear a picture for the responder as what this company provides.
I just wanted to mention with Krista Mays, also a Naval Postgraduate School alumni, actually he wrote his thesis on apps in Homeland Security. So that was good to delve deeply into that at a scholarly level because apps are so omnipresent in all of our disciplines. And on the subject of Homeland Security theses, it's important to mention that all of these are available online in the public domain. They've actually been found on a number of sites. I think people are actually charging for them, but it's worth noting that they are free and available to the public if you go to the Center for Homeland Defense and Security website. These theses can be searched for by keyword or by author. At the Naval Postgraduate School also, there's a lot of interface, obviously, with the military, with the defense sector, which is one of the reasons we wanted to invite Mr. Clint Green, a consultant with ZPLN, who's spent a lot of time working in that area, to represent the defense perspective.
So also besides being a panelist, Clint was interviewed for the podcast, and he brought in a very different perspective compared to our local responders and our private sector entities that were interviewed. Okay, we have Clint Green with us. He's a consultant with ZPLN. How are you doing today, Clint?
Great, thank you. How about you?
Great. You were one of our panelists today, and I was hoping that maybe you could discuss a little bit what you think the role of technology and artificial intelligence is in Homeland Security.
Certainly. It was a privilege to be on the panel with a number of parties from different perspectives. I was there to discuss the defense perspective. I think it's important that the audience had a chance to learn how AI, both artificial general intelligence and the machine learning approach to artificial intelligence, which is more prevalent today, more useful today, more real-world applicable today, how it's being used in different domains, be it academic policy development, medical, and in my case, defense. The reality of artificial general intelligence is that it is largely over the horizon. It is a distant future for most ways of measuring artificial general intelligence, but that doesn't prevent us from wielding the technologies around machine learning and deep learning and neural network implementations that are also described as AI in our business today. The three places where they're being applied to success today are machine vision, which is using either still or motion imagery, and in some cases, non-visible, hyperspectral, infrared, et cetera, data sets to try to pull out features, aspects of the image that are interesting to solving or understanding how that picture applies to a given mission, be it trade route protection, border protection, smuggling detection and interdiction, and your variety of defense applications around safety and security threat detection. Another use case that is very applicable and successful today is influence operations. If you think of a chatbot like Alexa or Siri, they provide a natural language interface for responses to inputs, and it's given verbally or in some cases online as text. Using those types of technologies, individuals can use bots that scale, that never sleep, to communicate with individuals for the purpose of radicalization, for the purpose of disseminating a political view or influencing a political view globally. Those types of things, I think everyone who reads the news, we're all familiar with how they may have been used around the world in recent years. And that type of implementation where it's a low-level, noisy conversation, typically a bot spamming a communications medium with links or images that may or may not be true, but certainly trying to influence an outcome in its audience, or more complicated influence operations that involve false identities that are developed over time that lend more gravitas to the message being communicated and are able to influence at larger scale and in some cases bigger impacts. And the third use case today where we're seeing it in the defense, and it's certainly applying across the board, is in adversarial implementations of AI. And what I mean is when an adversary has access to the same data set that was used to develop a classifier or a way to identify features accurately within images or audio or whatever the data set you're working with, when they have access to that, they can actually tune specialized input that a human being may not know is any different from other images, for instance, or audio, and the computer will score it completely dissimilarly. And for anybody who's interested in a use case, how that might apply, all they would have to do is look for a YouTube video for turtle and rifle. And there's a great example of a motion video that is classified incorrectly, despite the fact that no human being would think the turtle was a rifle.
So today's panel, what point or major takeaway would you want the audience to have walked away with?
So there was a lot of discussion around what is AI, how AI is being used in different contexts, and how this world is coming to impact the audience at large. And I think it's extremely important to both understand when people are referring to AI, are they referring to the singularity, the artificial general intelligence, sentience of a program to think and behave as we think humans think and behave. Understand that most of the time when people are describing AI, they're not talking about that. They're talking about the machine learning, the statistical methods that are being applied to very large amounts of data to allow computers to solve really specific problems with high precision and have an impact outside of the normal places we would think computers involved in purely numeric use cases. I think it's important to always set the conversation up so that you're not communicating about AGI when you should be talking about ML and vice versa. And the other thing is that many of these technologies are highly democratized. One individual with a credit card has access to compute data at scale and some of these programming interfaces from large vendors like Amazon, Google, et cetera, to accomplish things that involve machine vision, natural language processing, speech-to-text, text-to-speech, and then even analysis of that text, sentiment analysis, trying to determine gender and age of the participant and then try to figure out what they mean in a context. Those tools are available broadly. And I think too often we wait for vendors to show up with a fully baked solution, and we don't take the time as practitioners in defense, law enforcement, and homeland security to get enough data literacy to be able to understand the domain of the realm of the possible, and then to pursue solutions that are smaller scope, lower stakes, but maybe have a bigger impact on your local mission. These things are available to anybody at any scale, very, very low barrier to entry. And I think because they're data driven, you don't have to wait for hardware to show up, for specialists to show up. You can actually start to engage with these types of technologies to solve your problems today.
I'm going to end with one last question for you. How would you say technology is a downfall to us as law enforcement, military, first responders in general?
So when you're thinking about the future, when you think about technology, you can describe how we're becoming more technology-driven, more reliant on communications and digitization of our existing job, our tradecraft. In one way, we lose the fidelity, the local touch, the local knowledge, the ground truth by lending our tradecraft knowledge to a globally averaged answer that works across a large enough market that a vendor would bring technology to bear, but loses the local touch, in the case of law enforcement, the walking the beat, knowing who the shop owner is, understanding when things are different in your neighborhood because the intuition is built up from ground truth instead of simply relying on averages and probabilities and eye in the sky answers. I think it's a mistake when we have access to these technologies to allow the technology to do the thing that we do best, when it could enable us with the thing we don't do well, remembering things that are difficult to remember, or being precise about things where getting it close isn't good enough. We need to know exact things. Computers are great at that. Computers don't need to do a law enforcement or operator's job. Operators can be empowered by them, but they shouldn't yield the high ground to them. When you're talking about the future, where technology is coming in the sense that it's something that's going to happen and change things, ask yourself two questions, and I'm cribbing from other futurists or folks like that. You say, what keeps you up at night and what wakes you up in the morning? So what keeps you up at night is the question you ask about AI or about ubiquitous cameras and sensors or whatever the thing is, Internet of Things, or whatever you're worried about coming. You say, what keeps you up at night is when it is used to your detriment, when something bad will be enabled by that. What wakes you up in the morning is how you can use it to better do your job. And AI is, I mean, that's the point of this panel. That's the point of this discussion here today, is AI has a lot that wakes us up in the morning. It's not all doom and gloom. In fact, it's very little doom and gloom, except where we hand agency of our job, our expertise, over to an average, a probability score. I think there's a lot more waking us up in the morning than there is keeping us up at night.
All right, so we've heard some varying input from the private sector. We obviously have the local perspective. We've got the state perspective from Lieutenant DeMaze's piece, especially on other areas of emerging technology. So Ray, talk to me about how do we pull all this together in such a large topic that we're calling artificial intelligence?
Well, forums like this can help us develop sets of questions that we can consider with our staffs back in our home agencies to sort of better position us to deal with the policy, public safety, and security challenges we're all facing as technology continues to expand exponentially. And it may be worth considering in this context the difference between complicated and complex. In a very general way, you might be able to understand that something that is complicated, perhaps an engineering problem, the outcome can be known as long as a series of very detailed steps are followed. Whereas something complex, the outcome is not always linear or predictable because there are so many variables that can play off of each other and create new unforeseen outcomes. So It's sort of a challenge for all of us across the Homeland Security enterprise. In fact, I'd like to challenge all professionals across the whole and public safety professionals across the enterprise at all levels to engage in these kinds of discussions, large and small, even brown bag lunches in your workplace, to sort of take on some of these topics. We used to say, think outside the box. I'd like to say, talk outside the box. You know, introduce a topic, invite a professional from another agency over for lunch and have some of these types of discussions.
So with all these varying topics under artificial intelligence and more specifically in the technology realm, it can get pretty complicated for both practitioners and policymakers. Obviously, it's not the first time local law enforcement or even any local first responder has had to deal with a complicated issue. Tracy, could you talk a little bit about how you're balancing the need to embrace these technologies with the traditional law enforcement work?
Well, that's a good question that you asked, because on the side, I actually talked to Clint Green about all this, and we discussed about how technology is becoming more of a forefront where everybody needs to be more involved with it. You know, the younger generations coming into the police department now are all growing up with a computer at their side all the time, no matter where they go, and what we all are using now as a cell phone. I think technology is great, but we always have to remember that there are times in which that technology will not be working for us, and that our initial trainings, intuition, and our gut is going to have to be used still in our line of work, especially as a first responder perspective.
Glad you mentioned a newer generation coming up sort of as digital natives, quicker to embrace the use of technology. But as we all know, in the public safety profession, security and privacy are real concerns as well. And those needs, not just for the individual officer or public safety professional, but for their agencies. The sensitivity of the information that we deal with day in and day out has to be considered as well. So the integrity of that data, the encryption, it all leads into conversations about encryption and case law and discoverability and things along those lines, and make sure we're appropriately firewalling or setting up these apps in a way that they're the way they're hosted, and at least a whole another dimension of discussion to balance privacy with the need for security and integrity in the information that we're dealing with.
You know, it's a good point, Ray, and to capitalize on what Tracy said, it is important to embrace that technology, but it's important to, as they would say in the private sector, it's important to not forget the business rules that got you there and use that technology to exploit some of those capabilities that you may need, either from the law enforcement perspective, the fire perspective, or in an academy setting, as you said, with young folks coming up. Young folks, I'm not that old, but young folks coming up and embracing technology that, from a native standpoint, that we are embracing at a later stage. And I think that's important to really go back to the whole point of this forum, right? It's awareness, and it's the hope that people will take away those questions back to their local agency or back to their private sector company to understand that these issues are out there. They can be a benefit or they can be a curse. And they're going to take us in new directions that we've seen before, new directions that we've seen public safety go in, but in new ways with new technologies. And so I think that goes right to the heart of your goal for this, Ray. The goal was raise that awareness, raise some questions, and really get the conversation started.
I agree. That's good. And again, you know, we have to keep these conversations going. There was an interesting piece in the New York Times just last month about over 21 leading universities across the United States banding together to push public interest technology, to see what are the intersections between technologies and privacy concerns and public interest. So these are important conversations that can't just be confined to our professions, but we have to consider our intersections with the society and that we serve.
Well, obviously, from OHSP's perspective, we were very happy to be a part of it. And also from OHSP's perspective, we were very thankful that you guys came in today. With that, I'll open it up to any kind of final comments. Tracy, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I'd just like to say thank you to everyone for giving me the opportunity to be part of this bigger topic discussion that needs to kind of be out there. And as Ray pointed out, you know, it is something that's in the news constantly because of really what it is, which is artificial intelligence and the technology that's out there that, even though I don't want to say young folks either, it's all that type of information that we need to know now. Most importantly, I want to thank Ray for inviting me to be part of it. As much as I kind of was busting his chops a little earlier, this was very informative for me and a very good learning opportunity. I also want to give a shout out to our Center for Homeland Defense and Security. If it wasn't part of an alumni chapter, I probably would not have actually gotten the invite to attend.
I very much appreciate you jumping into the fire the way you did and helping out. There was a lot of moving parts that day, so you really saved my life by jumping in to work on the podcast. I also appreciate the sound engineers who are working behind the scenes here at our podcast. But thank you very much to OHSP and Director Maples and, of course, all the panelists for participating. Most especially, I'd like to thank our hosts at the Maritime Security Center at Stevens, Dr. Mohammed Degani, the Vice Provost for Research, Dr. Hadi Saloom, the Director of the Center, Beth DeFaris, his Director of Education. You know, without them, we absolutely could not have done this. Without their support and the support of the staff that day was just incredible. We appreciate it very much.
And most importantly, I'd like to thank all of you, our audience, for listening. I might encourage you once again, look below and subscribe to NJOHSP's Intelligence Unclassified podcast. I'd also like to echo Ray's thanks for our team here at OHSP. You too for making the trek in today. And of course, if anyone out there has any other thoughts on the topic, Ray is always available to sit and hold a debate. Okay, so I thank everyone again for listening, and we'll catch you next time here on Intelligence Unclassified.
All links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njohsp.gov. If you have any ideas or topics for future episodes, please contact us on Twitter at NJOHSP or email us at intelunclass@njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.